Welcome, everyone. My name is Joel Forrester, and this is the Ex-Military Careers Podcast. I just wanted to say an enormous shout out to all you veterans, family members, and transitioning personnel all around the world for taking the time out of your day today to join us and understand a bit more about EMC and how we support the veteran community and how we work with fantastic clients as well to bring veterans into their workforce. EMC is a not-for-profit / social enterprise, depending on whether you're in the UK or the US, whose sole purpose is to support veterans in the United States and the UK throughout the entirety of their civilian career with mentorship and different career opportunities. Whether you're leaving the forces as we speak or you've been in the civilian space for a number of years, we are here to support you. Well, today I am joined by Andy Halliday, who is a 3-times Olympic Games Team GB hockey manager, specialist firearms officer, retired, an ambassador, a mentor to many across the UK, and a human factors specialist coach, and also a dear friend. So, Andy, thank you so much for joining us today. Today is all about high performance and really getting to understand some of your experiences and I guess opening up our community to learning more about you. So nice to see you. Thanks for coming on. Very pleased to have you here, as you know. So I guess to kick off, it would be great if you can explain to our audience a little bit about you, a bit about your background, your careers to date, and then I think they'll have a good idea of why you're here today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on. I think probably the first thing to say is that I'm pretty normal. I don't have any special skills. You know, I'm not particularly fast. I'm not, you know, when I think about the career that I've had as an athlete, I am not special. I am very middle of the road. So, school, not brilliant. I struggled a little bit with academia because I was a sportsman. You know, I'm big into my sport as a youngster. Anything that involved a ball, I loved. And of course, in those days, you know, we're talking about the 1970s here, Joel, some time ago, you couldn't get qualifications in sport. And obviously things have changed now. So as a result, my application was not what it should have been. And I came away from school with what, I mean, then they were known as O-levels. I think I had 3.
When you're aging.
So what do you do with 3 O-levels? You become a milkman.
Is that true?
I was a milkman, yeah. So first thing I did, I left in what was known as the lower sixth, and there was a company called Unigate, and they used to, electric milk floats were the thing in those days, and I think it's almost as if they've come back. I see a few of them, 3-wheelers. So I drove one of those, and I would say I didn't have a driving license at this point, so it's probably illegal. Ooh, the things that come out of the closet years and years later.
Well, I'd like to say, mate, just before you continue, the good thing about you being a milkman that's really relevant is that you always deliver.
Well, thank you for that, Joel. Anyway, so there I'm sitting in the cab one morning. I hear an advert on Capital Radio that's playing away. Do you want to earn £22 a week, play as much sport as you like? If so, why don't you join the Metropolitan Police Cadets? So I thought, well, that sounds like a good idea. Thinking about a year later, I'd probably do something else. But I did, and I joined. And 31 years later, stepped away from a career that just, I think, pretty much gave me everything. A career as a police officer, a good friend of mine describes it as a painful privilege, and I think that's a very apt way of describing it. I think you have to cope with the highs that you get from that role of responsibility and supporting others, but also the lows that it brings. And you know, it's a little bit like those of you that ski, it's like a mogul. You know, there is this constant up and down in policing, but you learn so much. You learn so much from that experience. So that that's what I reflect on. But I was also fortunate enough to be a fairly decent hockey player as a youngster. I was never good enough to go to an Olympic Games. I blame that on my having the turning circle of a North Sea ferry, which I think you've probably seen. So I, as I mentioned again, I was never quick. And that really stopped me from from becoming a, you know, an absolute star in the game. But I played internationally in the 80s, played for England, captained England.
Wow.
Was involved in England, Great Britain squads for some years. And since then, I've gone into coaching and managing and managed the Great Britain men's Olympic team. I've been to three Olympic Games. And again, it's a life of moguls. It's ups and downs. So I've been lucky enough to be in two very different jobs and experience a whole host of triumphs and tragedies. My last 18 years in the Met, I was a specialist firearms officer working frontline firearms policing, either in uniform as an armed response vehicle crew member or working counter-terrorist operations, hostage rescues, those sorts of situations. So you learn as much from failure as you do from success. And I guess where I am now is a bit of an old sage and reflecting on my life and the mantra that I bring to my everyday life. Most of it is based on experiences from a career in elite sport, but also a career working on high-performing teams in the Metropolitan Police. So that's a little bit about me. I'm very much a family man, living up on the Suffolk coast now. No kids, but I've got a couple of lurchers. You probably see me out running with the lurchers quite regularly. But now and reflecting on probably a fortuitous and a very, very enjoyable career and life up to where we are now.
Well, I can say, I think for you to turn around and label yourself as the normal Joe, I don't think is fair. I think in some of the achievements and how you're held in a lot of community groups across sport, policing, a number of different areas is by no stretch normal. You've been a leader and ambassador to so many different people, and so many people look up to you. So I think that's a bit of an unfair statement, so I'm not going to take that one. But I will definitely, we look back at some of your career successes and some of the high levels of high performing teams you've been in, and I think there's so much to learn there. And obviously today is all about high performance, and especially in teams. So how, in your opinion, and from what you've learned, how do teams, whether that's business, whether that's sport, whether that's military, whether that's policing, how do people and teams ensure high performance?
I think the first thing we need to define is high performance. What is high performance? Because I guess I've worked across organisations, and I now work in learning and development with a company called ClearTrack Performance, where, yes, we're trying to use our high performance experiences to benefit others. But I actually think life is about high reliability. So I would actually just bring it down a notch and say, what does high reliability mean? Because I think once you have that, you can then think about high performance. High performance is a mindset. It's what you do every day. It's not what you do in the crucial competition phase of whether it's international sport or whether it's a terrorist incident. It's actually about how you carry yourself on a day-to-day basis. So, I don't think there is a special recipe to high performance. I think it is about what you do. We had a great saying with the Great Britain hockey team during the last cycle about performing with the lights off. And actually what...
Lights off?
One of the values of the team was perform with the lights off. And actually what that means is that, if you're in the public spotlight, of course you need to perform, whether that's on the Olympic stage, the international stage. But actually the hard yards are put in away from. And it's very easy to slip into bad habits, slip into a non-performance frame of mind when you are out of the spotlight. So it's putting in those hard yards. And for me, the mindset thing, this is why I say, Joel, that I'm fairly normal. It's just that I've got a slightly different mindset around things. I'm not particularly big, strong, fit. I just have learnt my mantra around life, which is really about growth every day. Abraham Maslow, American psychologist, had this great phrase about you can either sit back, you have two choices. You can either sit back in comfort or you can step forward and grow. Now, whilst I appreciate you know, after five hard days at work, you do need to sit back in comfort. I think if you have the attitude that what, which is one of growth day to day. So what does taking yourself out of your comfort zone mean? Everything that I've done and all I've achieved has been because I've been able to take myself out of my comfort zone. And I know it's really difficult for folk. You know, it's really difficult. And by comfort zone, I don't just mean, you know, going out for a run. I mean, you know, going out and learning, developing yourself, becoming a better person. And I think it's quite a simple formula, because when if you think about what is difficult in a conversation, a lot of things that are difficult in life, often the first 5 minutes are actually really awkward. But once you get into the swing of doing something, having conversations with individuals and learning and asking questions is a brilliant example of that. And the first 5 minutes of it are always tough. You know, it's always a struggle starting a conversation off. But once you've passed that 5 minute mark, you know. So I think that's it's a great example. And even now, you know, as I said, I'm a bit of an old sage. I'm you know 60. By the time this goes out, I probably will be 60. And but I still go out every day and I try and learn something new. Mm. But yeah.
So bring that back to your SFO days. So. I mean, obviously, you know, I've experienced very similar worlds, so I understand the different levels of requirements and what you're doing there. One thing I'm intrigued to understand from you, what did pushing yourself every day when you're in that role, what did that look like to you personally?
So it was about, first of all, working with like-minded souls. So the ability of the team, is the important thing here, because you can have all the best values and all the best beliefs as an individual, but that's got to be shared across the team. So for me, it was about setting a high standard on a day-to-day basis. And it comes back to that performing with the lights off. So, you know, never being late for briefings, high personal standards around making sure that you were mentally and physically prepared for the sort of work that you did every day.
Yeah.
That was important and was quite a challenge because, as you know, as a specialist firearms officer, you know, when the proverbial hits the fan, you are day to day working long, long hours. Mm. You're also working, you know, a decent diet is difficult. And, you know, resisting those trips to Mackey D's for every meal, it can be quite a challenge. So the admin, and you know, this is a great phrase we hear, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners will understand that phrase. You've got to sort your admin out. And that's the first thing. And that goes with the growth mindset. So preparing yourself mentally and physically each day. And I think also looking at the, you know, how you fit in on the team. It's interesting how we, for many years as a copper, I thought, it's my way or the highway. Everybody else had to really have the standards that I had, but actually everybody is very, very different. And we are all made up differently. And sometimes it's that diversity that is the strength of the team.
Always the diversity is the strength of the team. You need your techies who are good on comms. You need your pinpoint accuracy. You need your blue brains. You need your red brains. You need the whole shebang. So I guess that also feeds nicely into the different personalities of a team. So, you know, what are they? How do they equate to success when there is such diversity? Now, something we focus on really heavily with ex-military careers and the wider group with Genovo, you know, diverse people being equal and ensure people feel included, you know, the whole DEI topic is at the core of everything we try and do. So how did that look in your space? And even coming towards the international sporting stuff as well, how do you embrace that and how does that look to make a team perform to its highest?
I think the first thing is you have to accept that everybody is different. And I think I came out of the police service with a very police military mentality around, you know, my personal admin and why are they not as good at me as personal admin? And actually it took me a while to understand that we are all different. we are all different. And the thing is, you have to accept that people are not the same as you. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, if you think about the ingredients of a good team, and you know, for me, it's about creating psychological safety on the team, which I've spoken about with you before. It's about having efficient processes. It's about emotional stability, effective leadership. It's about creating a psychological edge. And the only way I think that you can do that is by understanding and utilizing all the different strengths that you have within your team. So think about it. If we have, you know, if we separate them into the what we call the insights colors, we have our green people who are driven. Really, green is associated with relationships, being quite emotional, a bit of tree hugging. You have your yellows who call them sunshine yellows, very extrovert. You have your deep thinkers, your blues, who might be quite quiet, but they are thinking things through. And then you have your reds, who are the very task-driven, you know, this is a black and white, you be there on time or not at all sort of approach. So actually, if you have too many of one, it can have a detrimental impact on the team. You actually need a bit of a mix. So for example, think about, you know, Olympic hockey. Olympic, playing in the Olympic Games, too many greens on the team, where are you going to develop your edge? If you're worried about relationships, worried about how everybody's getting on, how are you going to develop your edge? Mm-hmm. So I think the secret to certainly my specialist firearms teams and the work that we used to do, and I think it was approaching 3,000 firearms operations in total for me over 18 years.
Mm.
The secret is, and you've touched on it yourself, is that it's about everybody chipping in with their own super strength, bringing their own super strength, respecting that, and allowing people to sort of, if you like, do their thing and be themselves.
Yeah, interesting. So do you feel from your experience, I mean, this is a complete, I don't know the answers to this, I'm sure you can guide me. Should, you know, any companies out there, any teams out there, people who want to build high performance into whatever space they're in, is there should you have a quota of whatever, or should you be looking to bring in, should you even be assessing the people within your community or whatever space you're in? How do you go from where you are to understanding what that looks like to then moving forward?
I think it's often neglected. I think we tend to rely on CVs and an interview.
100%.
So actually, if you think that through, anybody can write anything on a bit of paper.
Mm.
The second thing is, you and I know that confidence is such a big thing in an interview. Mm. People, I talk about psychological safety being really important. People do not feel psychologically safe in an interview.
Mm.
They cannot be themselves. You know, yeah. We hear that a lot. Hence why I think that it is very difficult for people who are coming out of the police service, people who are coming out of the military, who are very indoctrinated in a way of doing things. I think the process is very difficult. So I would say to employers, you know, look a bit broader. Get to know these people really away from, if you like, that formal setting, which is the boardroom.
Mm. No, I totally agree. If you were looking back to exactly that, so you know, people from the military, from the police, who have spent a massive length of time in either or both, they will potentially be slightly institutionalized. So one thing you touched on earlier is that the first part of being, you know, stepping into the civilian society and functioning in a positive way and integrating into that is acceptance. What advice would you give to someone, bearing in mind, you know, many of our listeners will either be transitioning as we speak, will be in that civilian space reasonably recently, or people who've been around for a number of years? What advice, even if someone's struggling in that space, to take that step and fully accept and embrace this new life, how would you advise someone to do that?
The first and probably foremost bit of advice I would give would be to say, don't go into your shell. And I think it might sound very easy to do that. I'm actually transitioning at the moment from a career of 16 years working with England and Great Britain hockey.
Mm.
Being in that environment, hockey has been such a major part of my life. You know, since I was knee high to a grasshopper, I was holding a hockey stick. Mm. You know, that's 50 odd years, and I'm stepping away from that now. So how am I taking that on? Because my identity, you know, I'm known. You've mentioned it on many occasions. You know, you are known as the Great Britain team manager,
mm.
but I'm now not. And the players are going away, and I'm not there. And so I'm struggling cognitively a little bit with that at the moment.
Talk me through that.
I say a little bit of a high. We finished fifth in the Tokyo Olympics, and that was always going to be my last sort of step. And we were desperate to win. You probably sense I'm just getting quite a little bit emotional here, Joel. But
good, that's good.
So you know, it would have been fantastic to get a medal in Tokyo, and that was always the plan. Because Tokyo for me was a bit of a bonus, in that in 2020 when COVID struck, we thought Tokyo is not going to happen. Mm. But then it did happen, and we went, and we had really high hopes for doing very well, and it would have been fantastic to round off my career with a medal.
Mm.
And it was all quite abrupt. So we finished in Tokyo. I came back, and I sort of, we talk about a pre-mortem and how you prepare yourself to step away. So I think it's really important to try and visualize what it's going to be like away from hockey. And I tried to do that. So for your folk who are stepping away from the world, you know, the military world,
mm.
don't just let it happen. Just actually pre-mortem it. So try and visualize yourself in that space that it might be a few months later. Just try and visualize what you're going to be going through so that you can prepare for that. So I tried to do that, and I've been around the block. So, you know, that's something I should be able to do. And I think generally I came back, I was physically, mentally pretty drained. I wasn't that well for a week or two, but then I was okay. It's only a number of months later when now the international hockey activity starts again. And there I am, you know, out of it all, that actually I'm starting to struggle. So what am I doing? I'm staying in touch with people. I'm also staying in touch with people who've made the same decision as me. So there's a guy called George Pinner who has played in goal for many, many years, who has just retired. Captain Adam Dixon of the Great Britain Men's Olympic Hockey Team. They've done the same thing as me after many years. So I've stayed in contact with them.
That's good.
And what I find is a real, real help is just talking it through. You know, how are you feeling being away from... So the three of us talking. So that would be a big bit of advice, is that, you know, don't... And it goes hand in hand with don't stay in your shell.
Yeah.
Talk to people who are going through the same experiences. Talk through how you're feeling.
Is it
as you sensed from my emotion, you know, a couple of minutes ago, it is challenging. And that's going from international sport. That's not a major lifestyle change.
Did you experience the same thing when you left the job?
I was very lucky, actually, Joel, in that I didn't, because the last few months, couple of years of the job, I was always focused on stepping away when I had my 30 years service. So I sort of prepared myself for that, but I was actually very lucky because I stepped straight into the team manager role. And I think within 6 weeks, I was at a Commonwealth Games with England. So actually I didn't really have time to stop and think. And I went from a role with working alongside like-minded individuals to a similar role within weeks. So actually I was quite lucky in many ways. But I'm still, you know, now years and years later, I'm still in contact with some of my colleagues. I still talk through with my former. I meet them every now and again, my former Specialist Farms team colleagues. You know, we have a WhatsApp group. Those sorts of things I think are really important. It's almost like it's a very gentle transition. We have micro and macro transitions in our lives. And believe it or not, you're dealing with transition every day. You go to work, you then have a micro transition, you know, when you come home and you will see your daughter. Mm. That's a transition from working. And then we have our macro transitions, which get bigger and bigger and bigger. And for military folk, that's major, stepping into civilian life. Mm. So, you know, the whole identity thing is a real tough one.
I remember the day I left the parachute regiment and driving out of the camp gates, having handed in my MOD card and pulling in to the lay-by just outside camp, getting really upset, really emotional. And then weirdly, and I don't really understand, maybe you'd be able to understand why this happened, but the first thing I thought is that my mother would be less proud of me because I'm no longer, you know, this paratrooper represented as this uniform off to Afghan, Iraq, all that kind of stuff. I was just a normal person. And I think I've spoken with Colin McLaughlin before, you know, Colin, you know, SAS soldier, and he tells an incredible story about when he left Hereford, driving out the gates, got to Scotland and broke down into tears, you know, again, same thing. Like he had this, you know, this SAS soldier, you know, hero, all this kind of stuff. And he felt less of a person because he'd left. And the interesting thing for me, and having spoken to a number of veterans who are transitioning currently, have been in the world, in the civil world for a number of years, both UK and US, is that everyone feels that. Every single person has had, you know, male, female, across the board, they have had a moment of that form of emotion. And I think the one thing from different people I've spoken to that seems to work for them is allowing yourself to be okay with feeling that. Whenever it comes on, it's okay. Like, embrace it. Take it as a badge of honor that you've gone through that and work your way through it. And after time, that certainly from the people I speak to, the time seems to be a bit of a healer. I mean, you know, you're very much more tuned into the human brain and how that all functions and work. Is that the way, or is there better ways to deal with it than just that?
You've got to face up to it. That's the thing. A lot of people, they get those thoughts, they get those emotions, and they bottle them up. Now, research tells us if you bottle up, because it is a traumatic event, there's no doubt about it. It might not. If you actually stand back and look at it, you probably think, no, that's not trauma. You know, it's just, you know, it's change, it's transition. No, it's a traumatic event. Mm. You know, it's a major life change. And if we think about how we deal with trauma, trauma is this threat response. So when we get this trauma in our lives, we have a threat response. So you sort of breaking down in tears in the car is a threat response. Now, the thing with a threat response is that we naturally would associate negativity with it. And that's probably why you're thinking, oh, I'm letting my father down. That's the negative threat response that we get in our brains. Mm. If you actually think methodically about things and take a little bit of time, and it's really about reframing and focusing on, you know, the really good things that you've done within your military career and what you can be very, very proud of. Mm. So when I focus now and think back on how fortunate I've been to go to 3 Olympic Games, how fortunate I've been to work alongside specialist firearms officers, men and women of the highest caliber. You know, I've really enjoyed being alongside them, being alongside Olympic athletes. And okay, we might have not won a medal in Tokyo, but goodness me, the experience of and being fortunate enough to be part of Team GB and the BOA. So, you know, it's really about that reframing, coping with that threat response, that stress in the moment, and just taking a step back and being able to think through things methodically. Mm. One of the things, again, I learned throughout my life is that as human beings, we naturally shy away from conflict. We shy away from confrontation. So those sorts of feelings, we try and bottle them up. Mm. It's far, far better to deal with them in the moment, whether it's on a team or whether it's your own feelings that you get, whatever situation it is, you've got to deal with it in the moment. If you let it fester, so again, you know, trauma, TRIM, trauma resilience management. I know it's something probably some of your listeners will be able to relate to.
Yeah.
It's really about dealing with situations, talking openly about what's happened. If you bottle it up, research tells us that in four months' time, beyond 4 months, it will come back and bite you in the backside when you're not really expecting it.
Yeah, you've given me that stat before. We've spoken about it as well. I think, interestingly, a lot of our listeners as well, you know, PTSD will be very much on their radar, be very aware of that. And I think, you know, the British forces as a whole are doing lots of positive things to progress in that space. I also am a firm believer that we as individuals need to own a lot of that as well. And you know, it's not all down to the support we get elsewhere. It's also what healthy things we're putting into place within our own lives. And you touched on it right at the beginning through what's your growth in that day, you know, getting up on time, going through your process, eating healthily, sleeping well, hydration, that kind of stuff, all will help any progress when it comes to any of those fields. But no, listen, Andy, thank you so much for your time, you know, and being vulnerable. And I think that's what this podcast is all about. And I really do appreciate that. One final question I have for you. Where do you feel you are in your process of acceptance? If you're at a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being day 1, week 1, leaving that association, leaving Team GB hockey, 2 absolutely fine with it, no demons are there at all. Where do you feel you are in that process?
I think I'm probably at about a 6, Joel, at the moment.
Okay.
I think that's because, you know, the international hockey tournament-wise is about to start again, and I'm not part of it. But the reason I'm a 6 and not lower is that I'm moving up the scale towards an 8 or a 9, you know, being able to cope with it because what I've learned over the years, and I'm stoic. So I you know, control what I can control, and the brain is one of the things I can train and I can control. So I know how to deal with it. That's the thing. Mm. Yes, it's going to affect me, but I am getting there.
Yeah. Well, listen, sounds like we need to have a gin and a catch up very soon. Andy, thank you so much for your time. As ever, a pleasure. And you know, there's so many people that look up to you and really value all of your input that it's just an honor to not only be a mate, but also have you here on the podcast. So thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, Joel.
Ex-Military Careers is a social enterprise which exists to bridge the gap between the military and the civilian world. If you want to find out more, please visit our website on www.ex-militarycareers.com or follow us on social media. Together, we can bridge the gap between the military and the civilian life. But for now, stay safe and we'll see you soon.